What's going on, Meat Mafia? Welcome back to another episode of the Meat Mafia podcast. Before we get rolling here today, we want to give a quick shout out to you, the listener. We are so thankful to have you on board with the Meat Mafia, and we cannot thank you enough for your endless support. Without you guys, we are nothing. So thank you so much for your comments, feedback, likes, subscribes, listens, everything. It means the world to us. With that being said, please go to your podcast medium's platform, give us a 5-star review. If it's not 5 stars, maybe don't give us a review. Subscribe, do the whole thing. We really appreciate that. And also, please go check out some of the links below. We have some great sponsors and they are killing it in the world of food and providing great high quality food for people just like yourself. Quickly outlining our sponsors, we have Holy Cow Beef, Rick Ranch's, Equip Foods, and The Carnivore Bar. These are all great products. If you want to learn more, go check out the links below. Without further ado, here's a word from our sponsors. Holy Cow Beef is a regenerative farm based out of Lubbock, Texas, with humanely raised, grass-fed, grass-finished beef available for sale and shipment. Companies like ButcherBox source from outside of the US and Australia and don't specifically have the American Grass-Fed Association, or AGA, label, but Holy Cow does. They also sell chicken and pork in addition to their amazingly high-quality beef raised right here in Texas. Alden and Ann Warren have overcome their own health struggles, and they have inspired us by the way they live their lives and by the way they raise their animals. So go check them out in the link below, and they also accept Bitcoin, so all you Bitcoiners out there, go check out Holy Cow Beef. Also, if you're in Colorado, go check out Rick Ranch's, a grass-fed, grass-finished, regenerative farm servicing all over Colorado. He also accepts Bitcoin, so all you Bitcoiners out there, go hit up Rick Ranch's and get your beef today. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by The Carnivore Bar. The Carnivore Bar is an animal-based, shelf-stable product with only 3 simple ingredients: beef, tallow, and salt. The bar is inspired by the ancient traditions of Native Americans who needed to create pemmican bars to preserve meat for long-distance travel. The Carnivore Bar is perfect for animal-based athletes or busy people looking to follow a low-carb diet. It's easy to throw in a bag and take with you anywhere you're going, whether it's a workout, hike, or even packing it for a snack at work. I throw them in my triathlon bag and take down a bar immediately after working out. They're a fantastic product, so go check them out and use our discount code in the link below. All right, Bowtie Farmer, welcome to the Meat Mafia podcast. It's a pleasure to have you. We're excited to dig into some of the stuff you're working on in terms of building out a homestead and a farm. So excited to have you, man. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, sir. Glad to be here. Thank you for the invite. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, we think that we're really excited about this. We think that our listeners are going to get a lot of value out of just your knowledge. We've personally been enjoying your newsletter and your website, bowtiefarmer.com. I know you talk a lot about, you know, your own journey towards homesteading and becoming a sovereign individual and really connecting with the food and ultimately being able to grow that. So I think, you know, a great starting point would be, you know, we know that you're anonymous, but just a little bit of insight just into your background and how you kind of push forward with wanting to connect with your food and grow it and really become a steward of the land that you're on.
Yeah. So basically my upbringing is kind of always been outdoors. I really enjoy being outside. Grew up with my grandpa having a large garden, and that was always kind of in my DNA, I guess. And I was able to build a house on some old family land. So I'm very blessed in that regard. And in the process, slowly but surely getting back into that. So around the time COVID hit is whenever it really clicked, and I began to start a large garden, and I was kind of bit by the bug and began to really focus on that. And I learned so much about where our food comes from and how all that works. So that was kind of what got me into gardening. As far as animals, my wife is the animal guru, and so she has been always pushing for more and more animals, which I enjoy them, but she really is good. She's kind of the vet slash caretaker. So I'm the manual labor guy. I build the fences and all that, and she kind of handles the animals. So we've acquired chickens, goats, I have a cow, and you know, dogs, cats, all that. We actually have rabbits too. So that's kind of a little background.
Awesome. Can you talk a little bit about the Bowtied movement and how you sort of got involved with it? We're definitely excited to dive into some of the steps that you took to get to where you are with the farming and gardening. But I think just for some context, this Bowtied movement is so interesting to us. We'd love to hear more about how you got involved.
It is very interesting. So I think the way it started was a following called Wall Street Playboys. It was like a blog back in the day. It was kind of like geared towards younger single type men, how to get high income, how to build wealth, how to be efficient. It had like an e-com background in the writing style, affiliate marketing. It was kind of like a money Twitter back then, I guess. And so I didn't really get into it back then whenever it was that. But what happened is, and I think a lot of the guys or members follow Cernovich, and Cernovich would, I guess maybe 2 years ago, Wall Street Playboys changed their brand into Bowtied Bull. And so that account is like the founder of the Bowtied Jungle. So it seems like maybe right after COVID, I started seeing tweets that Cernovich would share from this guy, Bowtied Bull. And so I signed up for the Substack, and it just blew me away. It had some crypto stuff in it. It was just, it was like really, really eye opening. And started reading those Substacks and just loved it. And then I started seeing new Bowtied animals popping up on Twitter. And so I was like, man, this is kind of cool. So I decided to go with Farmer. And the rest is history, man. It's been about a year and I've acquired a nice following, and I'm kind of just plugging into this niche as my calling, I guess you'd say, on online, because I am passionate about it. And I'm really, lately I've learned, I've met so many other homesteaders and natural type Twitter accounts, and I've learned so much that this is a big deal, and I think it could be the answer to some of our, most of our problems. I don't think what we're doing right now is sustainable. So I've become very passionate about it.
Yeah, no, that's great. It's helpful to have that context. And I guess I'm just curious, you know, when you started that garden at the beginning of COVID a few years ago, did you have in mind that it was eventually going to turn into this homestead, you know, kind of ruminant type thing that you're growing now? Or were you more so like, hey, I just want to get connected to my food a little bit more and just start a garden and see what happens?
Yeah, that's a good question. So before that, you know, we had been playing around with the goats and we had a few chickens, and that was all fun, you know, and then we got more chickens and I built a larger, more permanent coop for them. And we started, you know, it's a learning curve. It's just kind of the way everything evolves. Everybody has their own story of how it goes, but it started with the animals. And then around COVID, I don't know why, I guess I'd always had a small garden, but it was just so much work. The way I was doing it, the row style gardens, you really have to have an implement for your tractor to build those rows. And so that kind of opened my eyes up, and I was like, well, I just need to go ahead and make this investment, because I had a small tractor, but I went and bought a tiller and a row maker for it. And that was a game changer, because now I can build a nice big garden pretty quickly. And so once I had that, I had all this, there was nothing holding me back then. So now it's like every year I make a fall and a summer garden. It's just something I do. And now that I'm in this type of business mindset, I'm in my local community offering eggs and honey and different items to even local people and trying to connect with them. So it's really cool.
How, I guess, what are the common things that you or other people that you talk to, as they're trying to get involved with this, what are some of the common hesitations? I imagine the costs and time investment that people imagine farming to be or even just starting a garden, they just imagine that being a huge time commitment and obviously a resource commitment. What other things do people talk about when they're like on the fence? And then what do you see as like kind of those breaking points? Because I imagine starting small is the right way to go when it comes to this sort of thing.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the problems I have with my niche is, or this whole garden lifestyle, homesteading is, you know, a lot of the guys on Twitter are younger, they're single, they're living in the cities. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard to gear that towards them. Yep. The only way I can do that is I try to get people to even in the cities, you can find local sources. You might not be able to have your own garden, but you could go to a farmer's market and you could really talk to some of the people there and try to find some local sources. So that's what I do with people in the city, because let's be honest, man, I'm lucky. I'm not the norm. Most people don't have the opportunity I had to acquire some land mm-hmm. at my age. And so, but yeah, it's either going to be people that are already have some land somehow, some way, or it's somebody that is a little bit more well off and farther down the road, and they're able to see, hey, I need to get out of the city, and I'm able to, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, but they do have garden stuff in the cities. I'm not saying you can't grow a garden in the city. I'm just saying if you're in a big apartment in downtown, it's not really feasible.
Yeah.
But you will still advocate for someone in the city saying, hey, you know, Bowtie Farmer, what can I do? You're saying keep it simple. Number one, connect with local farmers markets to connect you with farms in the area, which do exist. I lived in New York for 3 years. The farmers market's great. There's some amazing farms in the area. And then number two is like, if you can, maybe just start with some type of like small gardening or whatever you can do within your means in an apartment. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, if you can't grow it, and even me, for me, I can't grow everything I need. I mean, I still have to go to the store and buy stuff. So, mm-hmm. I mean, there's no way you can be perfectly 100% sufficient. Even people that say they are, you know, they're having special things going on that we don't know about. But what I'm trying to do is, you know, eventually you might go to the store and not be able to find eggs. I don't know. I'm not really a doomsday guy.
Yeah.
But it could be sometime you might have trouble finding certain things. So I'm always trying to push people to just kind of find other options now. And the way you do that is there's Facebook, you know, you go on Facebook and they have groups. I don't really like Facebook anymore, but it is very good for local groups. It's basically killed Craigslist. It's way better than most of the blogs that they used to have and forums and all that. Those are all gone. Now it's Facebook. So you can go on Facebook in your location and type in backyard chickens, and there'll be backyard chicken groups in your state, and you can start talking to those people. Mm. And then let's say you find somebody that has chickens and they're selling eggs. So you drive out there one day and you say, hey, where do you get your milk, or how do you get beef? And maybe they have somebody else they know that does that.
Mm-hmm.
So then you start buying from them now, like actually supporting them.
Mm.
And so then whenever you can't find any eggs, they know you and they know you're cool.
Mm.
So that's the way I see it. If you're in the city.
Yeah.
That's what I would be doing.
What percentage of your food would you say that you grow and previously before you started all this pre-COVID, what percentage of your food were you growing or able to get for yourself just through your own means and methods of creating food?
So it's really hard to provide everything. I mean, it's almost impossible, but what I can say is I don't buy eggs anymore.
Mm.
I don't buy milk anymore, and I don't necessarily have to buy beef. Whenever I get completely set up, I would like to not have to buy meat, not have to buy milk, and not have to buy eggs. So that's pretty big.
That's like 100% of my food.
Vegetables are aside. They're always going to be there. Yeah, vegetables too.
That's a great goal. Sorry. No. What is the feeling like eating the eggs and honey that you're actually growing yourself compared to something that maybe you would used to you formerly buy in a supermarket or grocery store?
The eggs are nice and big. You know, I haven't bought store-bought eggs in years. And so I don't even think about eggs. Like they don't even, it's just nothing to me, mm-hmm. but I sell them to people locally and they really enjoy them. You know, they say they're better. I like them. I don't have any problems with them. I'm not like a big egg guy that eats like 12 a day and eats raw eggs, but at night, like once a week, we'll have breakfast for dinner, you know, yeah. we'll eat eggs or it's an easy snack. So they're nice to have. And mm-hmm. whenever you grow your own stuff, it just feels better. It's hard to explain, but maybe one day more people will experience it.
What were some of the points where you were maybe struggling the most as you started getting going? I know there's a lot of planning that goes into this. Maybe you could walk us through kind of your mindset around planning and building this phase by phase. Cause it really does. It sounds like, I don't know if it was this way, you'll have to explain this, but it sounds like you did it pretty methodically from gardening and then adding a few animals. And then now you're really kind of leaning into some of the dairy and the beef production side of it as you continue to grow this thing. So I'd be curious what the planning process looked like for you. Facebook sounds like it was a great tool. Is there anything else that you were doing?
Well, you just got to start small. I was telling this guy the other night on Twitter, you know, if you're getting into chickens, just get you a small little coop. Don't try to build your own. You can build your own, no problem with that. But a lot of people get discouraged, like trying to go the hard route, you know, mm-hmm. just go ahead and buy you a small coop at Tractor Supply or wherever and put it together and go from there. Get you six. I do recommend getting more than two chickens as chicks because they're probably not going to make it. Mm. They are very fragile. So don't be scared to get a lot of chicks, you know, enough that'll fit in that coop safely. So that's one thing I would say, just go ahead and buy you a coop and then you can always keep it. It's always good to have a small coop for a hospital to put, you know, young chicks in. So it's going to get used. And if you don't like it, you can sell it. You know, it's hard to sell something that you built yourself that kind of looks a little crappy, right?
Yeah.
So that's one thing. Another thing that's really hard for people with chickens is protecting them. You know, they are, if you're kind of out in the country, raccoons will kill them, possums, foxes. So that was difficult. That's always going to be a problem. The way I've fixed that problem is I have a large guardian dog. Mm-hmm. It's a girl. And the females kind of stay close by. They don't necessarily run off as bad. Mm-hmm. And so she just roams my property, you know, my small yard area all night barking. And a dog barking will keep most of the predators away. They're not going to come around if they hear a dog barking. Mm. It's strange. So that has fixed that problem, but I know it's not feasible for everyone to just have a large dog roaming their property at night.
Yeah. Sorry, were you going to say something?
Well, no, you can go ahead.
I was just going to ask if there are any other beginner mistakes that maybe you made or see some of your clients making that you'd want to talk through on the podcast.
Beginner mistakes, they're learning opportunities. Mm. So you're gonna make mistakes. There's nothing you can do about it. We've made so many mistakes. It's not even funny. You know, you just learn from them. And every single part of the homestead is like a rabbit hole that's 10 miles long. Mm. You know, the gardening, there's so much to learn. The goats, there's so much to learn. Chickens, everything. So all you can do is find somebody that's local that can give you advice, or me or anybody, you know, plug in, learn as much as you can, and then go do it. That's the only way you're going to learn. You know, you can't just ask 10,000 questions and not do it. You right. have to finally just step out on faith and try what works for you, because whatever works for you might not work for me in my location. That's another problem with Twitter, writing for Twitter on my Substack. I forget that it's like worldwide. So a lot of the stuff that I might be talking about might not be applicable. There might be somebody that's reading my Substack thinking I'm an idiot, you know. It's kind of humbling.
Well,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's cool to be able to share that and get feedback from people in different pockets of the world, because it's not really the same. I think one of the things that we've learned through talking to a lot of ranchers is cows in Texas are dealing with different problems than cows in Colorado. Even though they're generally the same animal, there's a lot of different things going on that are factoring in. So
yes,
I'm sure you've dealt with that as well.
Yeah, I don't even mess with snow. I mean, I don't know how those guys do it, to be honest. I couldn't do it. I'm a tough guy, but I don't like snow, and I don't like cold weather that much. So hats off to those guys, for real, for real. So the cow world, I wrote 3 articles on goats and meat goats and beef. And I'm new to beef. I have no idea. And, you know, I'm still learning too on just about everything, but I have learned so much as far as cows go recently that it is a huge industry. And now I know why beef costs so much right now. I mean, it is. So I see you guys are big on the beef.
Yep.
But you are, we'll talk about y'all later, I guess. I guess y'all won't be able to talk about too, but I have questions for y'all one day.
Ask away. We're more than open to sharing. And but I think one of the things we've been surprised about learning about the beef industry is a lot of the processing that the ranchers that we talk to, what they talk about, the processing plants being such a big problem. Is that something that you've come to realize as well?
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. I'm kind of a small time homesteader. So sometimes I'll get way over my head, you know, on Twitter. I'm not a big farmer. You know, I'm not planting acres and acres of corn. I mean, I'm just a backyard gardener with some animals. So people see farmer, both have farmer, and then they're like, this ain't a farmer. And I'm like, well, I'm a fake farmer, right? But that's just kind of a joke. But basically I'm new to the whole butcher and the cattle processing facilities and the sale barns. I'm just now getting into that. Basically what I'm doing now is just growing a steer or a bull for me. You know, I'm going to take it to the butcher actually next month, and I'm going to bring it home and put it in my freezer and see how it tastes. Right.
Wow.
So hopefully it works.
Yeah. Are you, how different is your perspective now just on the food system and how disconnected we are from the inputs that we're actually putting into our body after, you know, growing chickens, hens, dairy goats, bulls, et cetera?
Well, it's really eye-opening, because once you start feeding animals, then you start asking, okay, well, what am I feeding? You know, I just bought this bag from wherever, some supply store. And so I don't even necessarily know some of the stuff that I'm feeding my chickens, right? I don't technically know exactly what it is. I know what it says on the packaging. But then you go to what's in the store in the freezer section. I mean, there is no telling. There's just no telling. So you really, the organic label might not be what everybody thinks it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize, okay, well, I'm going to grow my beef completely chemical free, just grass. All right. Well, how are you going to water it? you're going to do reverse osmosis watering, you know, out there in the field, because what's in the water that you're drinking or that the cow's drinking? I mean, it can go, I mean, it's just such a big world as far as if you're trying to really go chemical free, that I don't know if it's possible, but you can definitely try. I guess that's what I'd say.
Is that what you've been trying to do, trying to follow this chemical free route? Because we've talked to one of our buddies here in Austin. He's starting a small farm, and he's having the same feedback you are, which is like, where's all this stuff coming from? You don't really know exactly what's in some of this feed. And also just like the low input style demands so much more attention from the farmer to get everything right. Is that something that you're leaning into, this low input style, no chemicals, or are you kind of weaning yourself towards that as you get more advanced and more skills as you become a little bit more of a master of this trade?
Well, in my garden, I don't put any chemicals. I'm done with that. Chemicals do help, like tomatoes. It's hard to keep the stink bugs off the tomatoes. So you put a little liquid seven dust on them, and it works like a charm. But I've gotten to where I can't do that, man. I just can't let, my mind won't let me do it because I don't necessarily want to be eating that. And so in the garden, I'm chemical free. As far as the chickens, you know, you think you're good, and then you watch some video on YouTube and they're like, no soy, no, don't be eating eggs that are fed soy from chickens that are fed soy and all this. And yep. It just opens up a whole nother rabbit hole to go down. It's like, well, how far do I really want to go down this hole? Because it starts getting expensive, basically. I mean, if you're trying to go completely organic chicken feed, I mean, come on, man. Think about it. How much that's going to cost. Mm-hmm. So at some point, it's not feasible to worry so much about stuff like that. And I don't necessarily worry too much about all natural, but I don't want chemicals. Like, I don't want to be eating the antibiotics and the supplements that they put in the meat. Right. I don't think that's good for you.
Right.
So I'm concerned about that. But as far as like what my chicken's eating, if it's eating GMO, I don't know how far I want to go with it. Mm-hmm. It's a concern, but I don't know if it's possible right now for me to handle, worry that much about it, if that makes sense.
Totally. One of the things I was listening to a Joel Salatin podcast the other day, and he was talking about this town in Belgium that introduced a program that allowed each citizen to adopt like 1 to 3 chickens for free. And they saw the food waste of that town go from like 50% of the food being wasted to almost 0% of the food was wasted just by bringing chickens onto their property. And I thought that was a really interesting point, where if you can feed your food scraps out to your chickens for as food, you can essentially get rid of a lot of the food that goes in the trash can. Have you noticed that as you've gotten into this?
Oh yeah. We don't throw away any type of food. It goes into a bucket on our counter, and every day it goes out to the compost area. And usually the big dog will be the first one in there and get what she wants. And then the cats maybe, and then the chickens will be down in there. And that's kind of how it works. And then whatever's left is a compost. It's a big just pile, and I'll scoop it up and throw it out in the garden whenever I'm starting a new one. So yeah, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, that's the way it should be. Think about all the restaurants, man, all that food they waste. It's crazy. Insane. They should have, but see it, you know, it's hard to do. It's just more money. It costs more money to come, you know, collect all that food garbage and take it somewhere. It's easier just to throw it away.
Right.
So yeah, that's very interesting though. It's definitely good to save your scraps and feed them to your chicken. That's like what my babies, you know, they won't eat all their food, And it's like, well, you need to eat all your food, but I can just put it in this bucket and feed my animals. So right. That kind of makes it a little bit better.
Yeah, take some of the pressure off. It's an awesome system. I wish the restaurant industry could figure out a way that it was feasible to do that, because there's so much food that just gets sent back and then no one can do anything with it other than throw it away, which seems like a massive waste if it's just going to a landfill.
It's unsustainable. I mean, think about a buffet.
Oh, man.
I mean, there's no telling how much food they throw away.
It's insane. one of the things you touched on before was the how you have your first bull and you're going to take it to the local butcher shop and, you know, freeze it and have all that meat for a long period of time. We have a buddy that's a small farmer as well, and kind of having his own homestead experience. And one of the things that he talked about was, compared to the chickens, hens, goats, I think he has pigs as well, he mentioned how much less maintenance his cows are compared to some of the other animals on his farm/homestead. Have you found that to be similar for yourself too?
Yeah. I mean, so I got into the cow thing. I bought half a cow from this farmer about a year ago. And I was like, well, I can do that. So he told me what to do. He said, you need to find like a young steer, bring him out there and keep him for a year or so, and he'll be ready for butcher. So I went on Facebook and I found a young, it was a bull, I guess, but I told him I wanted him banded. He's like, oh yeah, I'll band him. And I said, I don't have a trailer. Can you bring him to me? He said, sure. So he brought him out and I was kind of new. I don't really know what everything's supposed to look like. And he wasn't banded. He gave me a damn bull. So now I got this bull out. And the problem with the bull, he's going to be young. I think the meat's going to be fine. But he's taken up a nice little area that I have fenced in. And I can't put any other animals in there with him because he is a bull. Right. So I had a couple male goats in there with him and they were doing fine. But lately, he's just so big that I'm scared he's going to hurt the goats.
Mm.
So, yeah, you're right, though. He doesn't get sick. He's pretty much fine, but he's just taking up a lot of space that I could be using to rotate my goats into. So right now, I'm trying to build another area for my goats to rotate into. It's just more work. But as far as maintenance goes, yeah, he's pretty simple. He hasn't had any serious sicknesses or anything to deal with. The goats do get sick more often, but that is usually due to the pasture or their living area. Mm. So if you have a bunch of them in a small area, they end up eating closer to the ground, and if the grass isn't very tall, they have a cross-contamination issue where they'll get parasites from just eating basically their own feces, I guess. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the way to fix that is to get them more pasture, bigger, so you rotate into different locations so they're always eating fresh stuff.
Mm.
So that's usually what happens with the goat while they're sick. My wife is good. She knows how to treat them if they do get sick. So it's not a huge deal, but yeah, the cow probably is a little bit more hardy.
Are there any animals that you're thinking about bringing onto the farm next after the cow?
We got the rabbits just for extra fertilizer and just to try them out. I'm not sure if we're going to butcher it. We don't, this cow will be the first thing we've ever really butchered that's one of our animals. We don't do that with the chickens. The chickens are just for eggs. The goats are just for milk and hanging out with. And so the cow will be the first one. We'll see how that goes. And then the rabbits we'll probably just use for a fertilizer and sell the young. I don't really have any more plans for new additions, honestly. I'm not really too big on pigs because they make a mess and I hear they're hard to keep in. So I think I'm about pretty much stocked out on. The next edition will be more goats. Fixing the trends. I think whenever I get this cow gone, I'm going to really start pushing goats. I think that's my calling for right now. I'm going to try that out. Try to start raising some goats for meat to sell at the market.
Nice. And you're doing dairy goats right now. So you're saying that you transition it to also meat goats as well?
Well, these local, so the goat market is really catered towards different ethnic groups in your location. So you can call the goat meat market and see what type of animal they'll take. The one around me doesn't really care as long as it is not a pygmy goat, which is a breed of goat. And it has to be less than 70 pounds. Mm-hmm. So the goats I have are dairy goats, but they'll take them. So that's the beauty of goats. And that's one thing I like is that I can raise these dairy goats and sell them to the market.
Got it. So
that's a plus. Like, you can't do that with cows. It's usually a Holstein, and those type of cows don't really grow big muscly frames. So you can like butcher a dairy cow, but people typically don't do that.
Got it.
A lot of the headlines recently that I've been reading, and I think some of it is probably due to clickbaity headlines, but some people are starting to get worried about food shortages. Is that something that you think about? You know, obviously it's not a concern for you, but like your local community, are people talking about that sort of thing in your world?
Food shortages is such a weird idea. It's hard to even imagine it happening. You know, of course, whenever I see it, it worries me. But if you think about it, like, okay, what are we going to be running out of? Like, are we going to be running out of like Big Macs? Are we going to run out of everything? Are we going to run out of Doritos? You know, what's going to go first? Because I don't really eat a lot of Big Macs and I don't eat a lot of Doritos. So I'm not really worried about that. I mean, and if we do run out of that stuff, then people just need to start eating better and eat, you know, it's just hard to really understand what would happen. I haven't found anybody that could tell me, is it going to be everything? I don't know. I don't know what it's going to look like. It's scary though.
Yeah.
It is scary.
It's got a lot of people thinking the way you're thinking, which is how can I become more self-sufficient? And I think some of the stuff you've been writing about is really about this concept of becoming a sovereign individual. Is that something that you were thinking about before COVID, or were you did that all kind of come along as COVID became more entrenched in everything that we were doing, and some of these concerns around, you know, where your food's going to be coming from became more prevalent?
Well, I've always been kind of like keep to myself, you know, just leave me alone type guy. Just I don't care what you do, just leave me alone. So that's kind of why I'm located where I'm located, and that's why I moved out here. But recently, you know, with the jungle, that's kind of their motto, and it kind of goes even farther to where eventually it might be a digital nation where people are plugged into their own country, but it's all over the globe. So that's a really interesting concept to think about. But I'm real big on people learning to be more self-sufficient. I get sick whenever I think about what's happened to our country, as far as, you know, Walmart came in and decimated local businesses. You know, now if I want to go buy a toy for my kid, I have to go to Walmart or Target or somewhere like that, a huge chain, you know, or buy it used or something. And that just kind of makes me sick that all of these good small businesses, even the feed stores around here, the local feed stores, are going out of business because, you know, Tractor Supply is just taking over, and they've made it so hard to do based on regulations. And So I just wish that we could get back to local people providing stuff for local people instead of this huge box store type mentality.
Yeah.
I get why they did it. I get why it happened, but I just hate it.
Yeah. And that's why the work that you and the Bowtie community are doing overall is so important, because you're actually giving people tactical, tangible ways to be able to build this hyper-localized approach to living and eating. And I always go back to the farmer's market point that you meant that you made earlier. It's like, that's not just a great way to connect with your local ranchers and farmers. There's also a ton of local small businesses and artisans that sell their products there too. So it's a great way to, it really just incentivizes the right system where you can go there, you can get an amazing local product that's probably going to be created higher quality. And then you're consciously able to give your dollar right into the pocket of the person that's creating it, that actually needs your money. Unlike this big faceless corporation that really doesn't care about you at all. You're just a number. It's just a very, very different experience overall. So I totally relate with what you're saying.
Yeah. And they've made it hard for people too. These local counties and cities and states, they put all these regulations on everything. And it just, you know, a lot of people online are like, why don't you start a website where you can buy eggs? You know, and I'm like, well, first, how are you going to ship them? That's kind of hard to ship eggs. But the next thing is like regulation. I mean, you got to figure all that out and sign the right documents and make sure you're crossing all your T's. So they've definitely made it hard for the little guys. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you, with everything that you're seeing right now, you know, your transition, your family's transition to this more hyper-localized approach to eating and homesteading, when you think about the future and what's to come down the road, do you generally feel optimistic? What's your overall feeling for the future?
Oh man, I hate doomers, man. I do not like this doom and gloom crap. I mean, I am a pessimist, like compared to someone like my wife, who's like half full all the time. But as far as like doom and gloom, I mean, there's always going to be an opportunity, you know, so they run out of eggs at Walmart. Well, I got them, you know, there's always going to be the world, life finds a way. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's the way I look at it, but yeah, we're definitely up against some heavy headwinds. I'm not going to lie about that. We've got an evil force that we're fighting. That's really just trying to get us all living in an apartment with nothing. That's their goal. I mean, I went to Costco yesterday, actually, for the first time ever. Never been to Costco before. And my wife was like, we do need some beef because we don't have any beef right now. So I look at the steaks, and I mean, they were all $70 for five. I mean, that's something going on with that, right? That's not normal. And that's not, something else is going on as far as why that is. That's unacceptable. And it's not right. And then the chicken was high too. Chicken was really high.
It's insane. It's like, I ended up as very similar to you. I wasn't able to go to the farmer's market in San Diego. That's where I'm based right now. So I had to order from Costco. And I think the steaks averaged out to over $20 a pound for a ribeye. And I don't even think it was even grass fed. And then the organic chicken thighs were like, yeah, it was like $6-7 a pound, and I've never seen it that high before in my life. And you know that they're fed corn and soy too. So it's like we talk about this a lot on the show, BT, is that you know, when there are a small number of hands that are controlling the pot, you know, they're able to manipulate the price and undercharge the rancher and overcharge the consumer. And that's just the game that you play when you give these companies your money.
Yeah. Well, we've gone global, so it's really hard to understand. There are some other people that know more about the large agriculture farming than I do, but it's just interesting. Like there's cornfields all over where I live, but I don't think any of that corn really goes to us. I think it goes and gets on a barge and goes probably to another country. Who knows?
Yeah.
It's very strange how everything's set up. And it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me the way it works, but yeah, it is what it is.
So BT, if someone's been listening to this podcast for 45 minutes now and they're curious about getting started, they've got $1,000 and some time during the week to get started, where would you tell them to get going? What would be your action plan to get started?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what their goal is. I guess if they have the capability, they just need to learn, plug in, follow people like me, follow people like you, sign up to my Substack. Maybe they'll learn something that they need to get them going. You need inspiration. So reading about it. I'm working on some videos. I know YouTube is kind of where it needs to be, but it's just a lot of work right now. $1,000, you know, you could maybe find a local farmer on Facebook that'll sell you some fresh beef. Maybe that will start the fire in you like it did me. Yeah, it's tough out there. I don't know exactly how that exact situation should pan out, but if you are interested, you can always hit me up and we can talk. And we'll get you going. You know, that I'll help out any way I can. I know that.
Yeah, we love that too. And we'll make sure that we pop in your Substack in the show notes too, because I know that that's a big thing for you, is trying to give people just very tangible advice on how to get started. And I think you and your wife are a great example. You know, you didn't have any of this a few years ago prior to COVID, and you made a concrete decision. Hey, I want to get more hyper-localized with the food that I'm eating. I want to grow more of my food. You started off just gardening. And now, like you mentioned, you're up to chickens, hens, goats, bulls. You've started a whole business based off of helping people, you know, do something similar in the homesteading approach. So like you said, even if it's just starting to go to your farmer's market and buy your beef from a rancher, or buy a half a cow where it averages out to $5 a pound, like, you know, you don't need to go all in. It's like, just take that first step, and then momentum is pretty special the way that it compounds over time. So this has been a great conversation, man. Thank you so much for coming on. We'll link to your website. We'll link to your Twitter, your Substack in the show notes. And I just really appreciate the work that you're doing, and, you know, would welcome you to come back anytime for a part two as you continue to build the homestead out.
Yeah, I forgot to even talk about it. I got the bees, man. I got
the bees, yeah,
for sale. So that's another huge addition to the homestead as well. So, yeah, that's kind of what I'm focused on also, is selling honey. So that is something I can sell to anybody through the mail. It'll show up at your house. Carefully packaged, and it's delicious. So check that out on my website, please.
Are you selling raw honey, or is it what form is it coming in?
Yes, yeah, raw, fresh, wildflower honey.
Oh, yep. Beautiful. Well, so, we'll link to that in the show notes. And again, as Brett said, I really, really appreciate you coming on, man. This was great.
Cool. Sounds good. Nice meeting you guys, man. Thank you.
Thanks, brother. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye.